Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Welcome into WEEI Afternoons, and that call of Rafi Devers' solo home run in today's 5-0 win was the call of the game brought to you by Nissan. You deserve a car that thrills you, and Nissan's got an exciting full line that'll put goosebumps on your goosebumps. Experience the thrill for yourself. Shop your local Nissan store and NissanUSA.com today. Red Sox win 5-0. They win 2 in a row after WEEI Afternoons talks to the manager Alex Cora when they were
back, baby.
They were back. Back then they were a sub-500 team, but not even 24 hours later, baby, you're 20-19. You're going to be 2 games back of the Yankees. It was a beautiful day at Fenway Park. There was all these smart kids in the stands because like STEM Day or something.
STEM
what a day,
day
for baseball.
Sun is shining, new Pope, and last night.
We got to push that off because misery needs, delayed misery and delayed gratification or something like that, because abbreviated WEEI Afternoons. But yes, we are going to spend the bulk of the time ranting, raving, bitching. We didn't have to walk to work today like Paul Pierce had to, thank God, because
he literally just arrived, by the way, in case anyone isn't on the socials right now, about 32, 33 minutes ago. Paul Pierce, a man of his word, unlike the basketball team he used to play for, walked 20 miles across Los Angeles in his bathrobe after losing a bet because the Celtics crapped the bed in Game 2.
We will get to that in a minute. But the Red Sox, Brian Baio, not great stuff, honestly. Only goes 4 2/3, walked 5 guys. But I'll say one thing that looks like it's back. The Celtics cannot close out games, and that's part of why they're down 2-0 to the Knicks, but the bullpen looks like it might be back for the Boston Red Sox, closed out both these games. Liam Hendricks even pitched 2 innings today. Your guys, Slayton, Whitlock, it's starting to fall back into maybe that bullpen just had a hiccup, and that can and will be a strength of the team. But more importantly, Ted, here's what I look at. One thing from the last 2 games in the last 24 hours. You know how many times they struck out in 2 games combined, Ted?
Tell me. I don't know.
8 in 2 games.
Okay.
A team that frequently in their losses strikes out, 10, 11, 12, 13 times? 8 times in 2 games. Again, I don't think it's a coincidence. When they put the ball in play, they win baseball games.
Absolutely. So look, it's great to see some of the guys starting to, you feel like maybe perhaps things are starting to, become more clearer, and that might be, for example, Navarez, Connor Wong got hurt earlier in the season. He was the starting catcher. Navarez hadn't played a lot in the major leagues with the Yankees prior to the season, and so he backs up Wong, comes in, and he looks like he might be a better option at catcher than Connor Wong. And Rafaela, who's been struggling mightily at the plate, with a couple of big hits today, was huge. And so with all the stuff surrounding kind of the talk about first base. And Rafi Devers, to see Rafi have the day he had was great. I mean, this is great. You won 2 in a row, and your reward is you get to go on the road and play 6 games against the Royals and 3 against the Detroit Tigers, and both of those teams are hot teams right now, very, very hot. And so, what's been the biggest kind of maddening thing about this team this year is this just not being able to go on a run. Can the Red Sox go on a run at all? They go on a six game road trip coming up here, and so we'll see. But the last couple of games, it was fun to watch the Red Sox play.
And they get a fun flight Thursday to begin that road trip. And so ends the positive portion of WEEI Afternoons, because up next, we're going to turn the page. We're going to have about an hour and 15 minutes to just decompose with the Celtics, because that was a hideous basketball game, hideous series so far. They can't shoot. They can't keep 20-point leads. Their star player looks anything but. Celtics talk up next here on WEEI Afternoon. So line them up, baby, 617-779-7937. Are you jumping ship or are you keeping the faith? Celtics, WEEI Afternoon's next. You're right. We were wrong. It was not a bloodbath. It was not a blowout. It was not a bounce back. It was nothing positive. If anything, it was uglier than Game 1. The Boston Celtics lose 90-91. To the Knicks, who, again, come back from a 20-point lead, again, force or watch the Celtics miss a ton of shots, and it ends, Nick Fitzy Stevens and Ted Johnson, in a very similar fashion. Game 1, Mikal Bridges took the ball from Jaylen Brown. Game 2, he took the ball, essentially on what the play-by-play calls a bad pass from Jason Tatum, throws it in the air, and the Knicks are feeling themselves. We find out that we asked the question to close it yesterday, who was more dangerous? The Knicks were more dangerous, and the Celtics have a significant problem right here. I don't care. We got a terp chirp that I think it's 8 straight years that there's been someone down 2-0 that came back to win the series. That's great, so at least there's a chance. But the Celtics are not playing good basketball. They've lost the ability to take the orange ball and put it through the orange rim with any consistency, and that is alarming 2 games in a row.
14 missed shots in a row in the fourth quarter is the new 45 missed three-pointers over the course of a game. That was
yikes.
That was just ghastly, ghastly basketball. I'd like Gross. To say I have prepared a number of shamees, if you will, from last night, including myself, who, foolishly enough, thinking that the Celtics would no way possibly shape or form blow another lead at home in the playoffs to the Knicks after picking my son and his friend up from a music practice last night at 9 o'clock, seeing they were up 14 points, thought, okay, I'll just catch the end of it when I get back to the house. I mean, it's only 10 minutes. They couldn't possibly, oh, wait, I got through the door, 91-90. My God, how did they do it? Shame on the Boston Celtics for once again going to sleep and providing no leadership, no energy, no effort, no attitude in the fourth quarter. Shame on their coach for not finding a way yet again to pull them out of this shame spiral and to provide the spark that they need. No one's asking you to make all the shots that your team is missing, Joe Mazzulla, but you are not providing any leadership. And overall, what we have here, Andy Hart, what we have here now is an identity crisis, because the New York Knicks have firmly established an identity in this postseason. They are the hustlers. They are the gamers. They have the heart, the soul, the grit, and the balls, as Kevin Garnett said. And your Boston Celtics, who have come in on the identity of world champions, best team in basketball, unstoppable when they play together and they put every man on the floor, now are not only losing their identity to the Knicks of being a champion. To me, if the Celtics get swept out of this series by the Knicks or lose 4-1 and have the Knicks repeatedly play more energetic basketball, play more tenacious ball, play more team ball, it makes me think that this last year's championship, when they faced a bunch of teams that were down their best player or two, was an aberration. I agree with Mego, who wrote at WEEI.com today, that this is giving off major conference finals against the Heat 2 years ago vibes, when they just basically mailed it in and someone had to slap them in the face and say, get back into the series, you jerks.
Ted, are the Celtics toast?
They are not toast. No, they are definitely not toast. They're exposed, and they are, and it is raw, and they pretty much are as far as just their collective confidence is probably as low as it's been in a couple of years. And you know, you reference Fitzy that series against Miami. It totally had that conference finals series against Miami 2 years ago vibes. It feels like, and I got mocked by Andy Hart yesterday for even suggesting that this might be a series. Hey, you know, they have an answer for JT. Maybe JB's knee isn't what it is. KP maybe is not going to be out there. And that's and I got mocked. My man, Brian Furzoco, he's laughing at me for suggesting that Jason Tatum and JB aren't guys, you know, that you should want to handling the ball that much in games. 4 turnovers from Jaylen Brown. 4 in just in the third quarter. 9 turnovers between those two guys. They had 17 turnovers and 17 assists. So we can talk about the missed shots, but what about the turnovers and the lack of assists? This team is, it feeds off of assists. And so that's something that needs to be talked about. And then just the way they freeze up, just completely inept, execution at the end of these games, both from players and from coaches. This is a shocking loss. This is what we all, and this is why I very rarely do I go on Twitter, but like a month ago, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to give Jason Tatum some love. I see some differences in his game. I think he's taking another step, and am I eating my words on that one. It felt like this team that we used to see 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, and it's like they haven't learned their lesson, and that's alarming to me.
617-779-7937, reacting to an alarming loss for the Boston Celtics. Game one was a one-off, supposedly. Brian Scalabrine told us yesterday it was going to be a bloodbath last night. It indeed was not, and Batman didn't show up, Robin didn't show up, and they're in a whole lot of trouble because the Knicks are feeling themselves. Jalen Brunson's a closer. Mikal Bridges is a closer. 617-779-7937. Do you still believe the Boston Celtics can win this series, or are they toast? Are they done? Are they going to be like just every other defending champion in the last 6 years and not make it out of the sixth round? Celtics talk up next here on WEEI Afternoons. That was the voice of Jason Tatum, talking about last night's loss, and he expects himself to be better. That's good, because I expect him to be a lot better, too, because he sucked. He absolutely sucked in this performance. WEEI Afternoons here, Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, Ted Johnson, and this is really starting to, and I was with you, Ted, you referenced it to close out last segment. I thought Jason Tatum had turned a corner. I thought he had reached a new level. I thought his pursuit of being this face of the NBA, I'm the best player, if you took my name off it, I deserve so much more respect. And Scal said it yesterday, if you're going to ask for respect and better attention from the masses and the media and the fans, you can't go out there and lay an egg in a game like this at home in front of your home fans. It's not just him. We can get into everybody. Missoula is in the firing range of our criticism. So is Jaylen Brown. So Porzingis, whatever's going on with him. But Jason Tatum wants to be not just the superstar leader of the Boston Celtics. He wants to be the superstar face of the NBA. And to go out there and lay an egg like this, to go down 2-0, and then some of the comments that he's had today other than just that were like, you know, you have to be the same guy no matter what. No. There are theories about clutch, and there are theories about, you know, when the going gets tough, the tough actually raise their game and take it to another level and get going. So I'm going to start there with you, Ted. I am going to co-sign, as they say. I was wrong when I acknowledged that Jason Tatum had become a better player and more clutch player. This was an embarrassing performance for him last night, and he's going to have a label stamped on him if he doesn't start changing some things.
Hey, Andy, you know what? We were both wrong, all right? We were both wrong. And so, you know, a lot of people, you know, came at me on Twitter when I admitted I gave JT his flowers, and they're like, he's been this guy the whole time. I'm like, no, he really hasn't. And I don't know how you look at Jason Tatum in these first two games of the series and don't question whether or not he has the medal. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, in the last two games, in the fourth quarter, so when it really matters, when it's nut cutting time, he's had 23 minutes of play. He's 2 for 14, 8 points, 0 for 7 from 3-point land. And the Celtics are outscored by 15 points when he's on the court in the fourth quarter in these first two games of the series. So that tells you all you need to know. And I really thought maybe I saw a little fight in him, you know, in that Orlando Magic series. I saw him maybe it was against the Orlando Magic, Andy and Fitzy. Maybe it was like, you know, I'll have our guys backs and I'll fight back a little bit and I'll show some grit because it's the Orlando Magic. The Knicks, where's that fight? It's like it shouldn't be, you know, one series you see it and the other series you don't. It was hugely disappointing. And I'm telling you, the performance from these last two games, it's going to hurt his legacy and how he's perceived, because everything you just said, Andy, people are not going to look at Jason Tatum the way he wants. And he thought just winning, you know, the championship last year, that all would all go away. You know what? There's a lot of one and dones, right? I mean, you see it all the time. You got to validate what happened last year by going out there and doing it again this year. And then you really really kind of set your legacy on a path you want, Fitzy.
That is correct. That's why I said we have an identity issue going on in these this finals. My God, these semifinals in the Eastern Conference right now. Jason Tatum begging to be the face of the NBA in the post-LeBron era, wanting to be him, the man, the guy, it. Now just not showing up in the clutch again, just like, unfortunately, he didn't back in those conference finals 2 years ago against Miami, like he hasn't time and again. I don't know. What is he? We know he can be the leader. We know he can be unstoppable. But, you know, the guy that scored 46, I hate the fact that we only have just like a few small examples over the course. We got 50-something against Philadelphia. We got 46 against Milwaukee. And then we have some, you know, tenacious effort against Orlando. Otherwise, you know, and a dunk against LeBron in his first playoffs. Otherwise, we have more failures. We have more letdowns. We have more games like last night where he just disappears for times. I don't know what he's thinking. I don't know why he isn't trying harder. And for him and Mazzulla, first, for your coach not to call a timeout so that you guys can set yourselves up on the final play, and then for Tatum to go right back to the same well. Man, Andy, people aren't talking on this team. They're just operating individually. It's like five individuals playing a team of New York Knicks.
Can I just jump in real quick, Andy? And you asked Fitzy, like, what is Jason Tatum? Jason Tatum is like a Sam Rockwell, like a Christopher Walken, like a Chris Cooper, like a Javier Bardem, like a Christopher Waltz, right? Okay, you see where I'm going? He's a supporting actor. He's a really good supporting actor. He's not the main actor. He's more of a supporting actor. That's what it feels like. That's how he's performing. That's how he's playing in these last two games, in my opinion.
Of those guys have won Oscars, though. So,
well, he's won a title.
In a supporting role. Yeah,
I mean, he's won a title in a supporting role because the MVP was Jaylen Brown. So you said, Fitzy, we've seen him lead and be the guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we have at the highest level when it's needed the most. And my comparison would be, Ted, is I think he has lead actor ability, but he doesn't have lead actor fire, desire, execution. There is something lacking. And, you know, he said it like, what they're going to say now? Well, we're going to continue to evaluate you. We're not just going to continue to say, oh, you sucked in games one and two against the Knicks, but you won the title last year, so we're not going to criticize it. No, we're going to evaluate you on a game-by-game, series-by-series, season-by-season basis, and he brings this upon himself. 617-779-7937. Let's work in the phone calls because I know they are loaded and people want to talk Celtics and Mazzulla and Tatum. So let's start with Collis in Beverly. What are your thoughts on that Celtics loss last night, Collis?
Hey, great stuff, guys. I just think Mazzulla at this point has been the coach for far too long. It's literally like a photocopy of that Heat series from a few years ago, and the fact that he's not calling these timeouts this far removed from that Heat series, just unacceptable, dude. And to not call a timeout and to tell him to rein in the threes, just get the twos when we're up by 20 almost or more, you know? I mean, we got to make a change there. I think that's our number one. I don't think we're taking this series. I think it's on Mazzulla.
All right, thanks for the call, Collis.
He's coming under a lot of heat, Andy.
He should be. You're the coach. I mean, we talked about it after game one. I think the poll was 54%. Ted, you came in. Your three-point stance was right out the gates. It's on the coach because I know it's the NBA, and everybody says it's a star-driven league and the players are what matter, not necessarily the coaching, and it's not like football, but there are key times in games, in series, in seasons where I do believe NBA coaches change the dynamic, whether it's with a play. Well, that's the one thing. They don't even have plays. And whether it's him or his staff, whether it was Brad Stevens and his assistant coaches, they don't have plays with the game on the line. So there's a combination. Your stud player isn't capable of taking over games when the game is on the line. He's not some freakish Kobe closer with the heart of a champion. And then you don't have the ability to draw up plays and get guys free. Yep. So, like, that's it right there. They are a team that lacks an ability to close. Forget all the other misses and all that. Because of the coach and the superstar, they can't close the toughest games at the toughest times.
And you mentioned plays.
No
like,
profit for the Celtics.
I wonder if you just have to wonder, like, does he not call a timeout? Because then he's got to design a play from half court to get someone open and to, you know, hit the winning shot. Like, And that's, it's like you saw, you know, what an inbound play looked like from the game before. It was, it got, the ball got stolen, right? It didn't even get a shot off, right? And yep. So you almost think he just lets them play because, you know what? I don't want to, like, have to draw up a play because I don't really know how to. You just needed, all you needed was 2 points. You had plenty of time to run a play from the inbounds to get a good open shot for a 2-point bucket to win that game. And I think that's part of it. I mean, and honestly, what was the hack Hakeem Olajuwon Robinson marathon that we had to watch? Plus 19? That audio is I couldn't believe it. I mean, you're talking about a guy. It's not Shaquille O'Neal out there. It's what is it? Mitchell Robinson, who had 6 yeah. points. I know he's a good, you know, kind of rim defender, but that's it. I mean, it just, you were occupying energy and effort for something that you didn't need to do. And I thought it made him look really just like the moment was too big for him right there. I did it. So I'm down on the coaching right now, Fitzy.
You should be, Ted, because even if he can't just take a timeout and calm them down, or if he looks in Tatum's eyes and sees that he doesn't have it, if he can't design a play for somebody else as well. And this whole entire idea, like, I think I've called him like Montessori Missoula before. The idea that he, like, the whole approach of like, get up and, you know, I don't need to call a timeout. How many games? I would love to know of the X number of games he's coached in the regular season and the postseason. How many times has he left the court with timeouts in his pocket? It would probably be almost 40, maybe 50%, because he doesn't like to. He has this approach of, you know, well, you're adults, you're professional basketball players, you guys go figure it out. You want to do that in the first 5, 10, 20, 30 games of the season so the machine can teach itself. This is how AI works. This is how the brain works. This is how people and athletes work. Mm-hmm. So you can teach yourself how to be successful in critical winning time situations. That's great. Now's not the time for doing that. They are 82, 87. This is the 89th game of the season. You're already down 1-0, and you could see your team was fading again in the second half. Otherwise, what purpose does the coach serve? I legitimately ask, what is he doing out there if he can't help either inject some life in there or avert a crisis like what was going on in the fourth quarter last night?
So let's hear that audio of Joe Mazzulla explaining why he didn't call a timeout and what exactly he was doing on that final possession to lose the game.
Process with not calling timeout there with 12 seconds left.
Had one left, got a good look on the exact same play 20 seconds earlier. Tried to execute the exact same thing. They did a better job of their lower pickup point, and we weren't able to get the advantage that we had on the last Tatum dunk. So good full court setting. They subbed out Towns, weren't able to sub out Brunson. Had action there, and we just didn't execute.
So, Joe, you expected the Knicks to embarrass themselves 2 possessions in a row. Because I'm assuming the Knicks are a little embarrassed that dunk they allowed by Tatum on the previous possession.
No doubt.
And they're professionals. They have a coach over there who, I believe, Tibbs, isn't known for his hair. He's actually known for his defensive coaching and prowess. He's a veteran, longtime coach. He's a guy that is not going to allow that to happen twice, in my opinion, with the game on the line. And I also just think, Ted, from your perspective, you know, like, Bill Belichick had that favorite 2-point play with the, oh my God, the snap went over Brady's head. Oh,
right,
no, it
right.
didn't. It's directly.
It's
if you ran that
Kevin
two,
Falk.
Yeah, but if you ran that 2 plays in the row and Ted Johnson's the middle linebacker,
true.
I don't think Ted Johnson is falling for it twice. Maybe once. I don't even know if Ted Johnson would fall for it once, but he's not falling for it twice. And Joe Mazzulla's plan, he is an NBA head coach. His plan is, well, it worked last possession, so I just figured we'd do the exact same thing. That was pure idiocy right there. That was embarrassing for the Boston Celtics and their head coach.
It was. It absolutely was. I mean, you know, and it was, again, it was shocking to, he admitted, I think sometimes Joe just gets over his skis and there's a defiance to him. There's a defiance. Like, you know, what was the game before? The duality, he just almost flabbergasted. I think it was B-Rob that would ask him about all the, you know, how
in
dare you
in both occasions
ask about,
it was, Ted.
Yeah. Right. And so there's this defiance. And so I think he just doesn't realize what he's saying, how it might be perceived. I mean, literally, like, Joe, if you're telling everybody that all you got to do is whatever team shoots the most threes is going to win, why do we need a coach? What do you do as a coach? Then you're basically just minimizing your entire your profession and job. Is if hey, whoever shoots the most threes is going to win the game. And so I just look, there was there was pressure on Joe Mazzulla to look. You got everybody felt like this team is the best, far and away the best team, you know, in the NBA, at least to start this season. And odds, I mean, they might not have been the favorites, you know, at midway, but a lot of people thought this team should be repeating. And there's pressure on that. And Joe is just not answering the bell when it comes to this pressure. And in these last two games, I mean, for New York Knicks, it's kind of like, oh, man, you know, it's like in Rocky IV. Well, this guy bleeds, man. These guys, we see in their eyes the doubt and uncertainty, and now we got them right where we want them.
I'll tell you, Andy, last night combing through the socials post-game, there certainly wasn't very much love for Jason Tatum. There really was no love for Joe Mazzulla. And while you still had some, you know, obnoxious green bleeders going, Celtics in six, Celtics in six. This is, you know, this, I may have said Celtics in four, but this is what I always saw. There were not a lot of apologists. There were not a lot of sensitive green teamers out there saying like, but the refs, but the starting time, but the this, but the that. Like, for Celtics fans en masse and at large to now also be realizing that their hero and their favorite player isn't coming through. Their team is faltering. The excuses have run dry and the coach is out of answers is legitimately alarming.
And Fitzy, Andy, real quick, just you listen to the post game last night. I mean, you got Eddie House and Scal. They said this quote, this team is fractured. Those are former players saying it. Not just radio hosts, you know, that do drive. They are
fractured.
Former
how
players.
Though, Ted? Like emotionally fractured or like fractured as in like broken?
You know what? My feeling is emotionally. Like they didn't go into I just remember it was Scal mm-hmm. saying this team is fractured. And I just found that to be pretty important stuff for a former player who covers this team and is not, you know, one for, or, you know, to be hyperbolic like that, to say this team is fractured when just, you know, I don't know, a week ago that you never would have said that. And so it feels like they've been exposed these last two games. Can they overcome it? It would do a lot as far as their legacies and to kind of, you know, here's the thing, fans here, we want tough, mentally tough, you know, teams. You know, can guys overcome obstacles? Can they overcome, the things put in front of them? And this is going to be a huge test for that. My feeling is what I've seen so far, that they're not going to answer the bell. But, we'll see. I mean, that's why you still play the games.
617-779-7937. Let's go back to the phone lines. Jesse in New Bedford, I'm sure he has a strong reaction to this Celtics loss last night. What's up, Jesse?
Hey, what's going on, guys? You know, I usually call with the Pats. That's my number one, but I had to call in here. Ted Johnson, he's absolutely right. Listen, the reason why everybody picked the Celtics is because they have more talent. But with the problem with the media and a lot of fans, nobody looks at, you know, you can't put it on a piece of paper. The heart, the desire, the determination, the will to win, the clutch gene. And I'm sorry, they won last year. But that was fool's gold. And I don't even care if they even come back in this series. There's going to be another time, another series, another team that it's going to get tough and they're going to will. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. I saw there was a couple loose balls. Jaylen Brown standing there like his 2 feet are in cement, reaching for the ball, not jumping, not diving, not nothing. They don't have the will to win. They got no heart. They're going to lose this series. And then that's it. Everybody overlooks this all the time. It's always the talent. Just like with Will Campbell. Oh, he can't do it. He's got alligator arms. Yeah, but he's got heart. Look at the way the guy talks. He's a warrior. And that's what the media always overlooks, and that's what fans overlook. And the Celtics will lose, whether it's this series or the next. They don't have it inside. They don't have the cojones.
All right, thanks
for
the call,
Jesse. That's a good way of
looking
at it. I love cojones.
I also think it's funny, you know, a lame dad joke here. The Knicks literally and figuratively have the heart in this series, right? They have a heart that is playing in aggressive
style. Josh Hart, yeah.
Josh Hart.
Would you have had, what were the odds last night, since you're so wont to talk about, like, I pulled out my app and placed a little wager on X, Y, or Z of a game
last
night.
Thankfully, I didn't.
Yeah, I know, because I got cleaned
learned
out
my lesson.
Yeah.
I don't trust this team. I'm not
by
putting
way,
my
team,
money where my mouth is.
The town I have lost the most on in this town is the Celtics, and it's
because they're
a
maddening.
Wide margin.
They're
they are, but like, did you anyone have Josh Hart being the high scorer in the game with a whopping 23?
No, but I didn't think the Celtics wouldn't show up, and they are. I actually generally think to question a professional athlete's heart or a team's heart, a championship team's heart, is probably premature and unfair. But when you look at what they're doing and the way they're playing, and I don't know what the words are, Ted, if it's fractured or they're lacking heart or cohesion, something ain't right for a team that is supposed to be, you know, perfectly built for this, and they've been together now multiple years, and Brown and Tatum's relationship, and Joe is the perfect coach. They do not look right. Something stinks.
Hey, Ted, let me ask you this. I got two for you. One, how badly do you think, you know, we'll look at, let's look at all the trays at, on the at the excuse buffet right now. How full is the chafing dish of Kristaps Porzingis is sick and they're not able to do as much as they want to?
Who cares? You play without him all the time. You play without him all the time.
They usually win without him as well, but like...
Yeah, screw off with that one. Move on.
I remember I asked it to Ted. Did you change your name before the start of today's show?
Sorry, I just reacted.
Okay, all right. Ted, now that Andrew's done interrupting you, what do you think?
I think they need... you know what? I think they need KP, and more than I think what you guys have said. So I'm more of a KP fan than maybe he. Look, he was in and out, and it. What is up? I have no idea. But he, I would rather him give what he gave last night, which wasn't much, than nothing at all. I think he is somebody that can be a difference maker for this team. And if you watch some of the pregame, it was Charles Barkley kept saying. That the what makes this team special, the Boston Celtics special, is Kristaps Porzingis, and it kind of he's the guy that puts this team over. I don't think you know people that know this game, like they know that he is the one that when he's on and he's playing and he's healthy, it is almost impossible to beat this team. And so I just think he's more important than what others think.
So we've learned it's quite possible to beat this team because the Knicks have done it two games in a row at TD Garden. They will get back at it on Saturday in New York, 3:30. I don't know if last night was a must-win. Saturday seems like a must-win. We'll talk about that next here on WEEI Afternoons. Continue to take your phone calls. But first, Dan Ball, give me what's trending. WEEI Afternoons, that's Kristaps Porzingis trying to convince himself and the world that the pressure is off the Celtics. But he's wrong because, as he alluded to, they are expected to win. This segment of WEEI Afternoons is brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, you got to get Glassman. Call sevens. That's all sevens. 617-777-7777. We are talking about that embarrassing performance by pretty much everybody who had either a jersey on or a Celtics logo on their warm-up or whatever they wear on the sidelines. I will say, real quick here, I did think the crowd showed up earlier and was trying to do their part.
They listened to you, bud.
I think they did. Yeah. Or just got used to a little bit earlier start time. So I'm going to remove the crowd criticism from the equation. But everybody else, you weren't good enough. You didn't do your job well enough. And I do believe the pressure is on because I do believe Kristaps Porzingis. This is a must-win game on Saturday. Or this will be an embarrassing effort. And I don't care about all those numbers from Terp about six straight NBA champions. You're built for this. You're built different. You're in the prime. You got the stars. You're supposed to go on a run here. We will be talking about this among some of the great failures in Boston sports history, whether it's the Bruins a couple years ago coming off the record-setting numbers, some of the Patriots coming up short maybe in 2007. This will be a historic collapse, but we're not there yet, so we're just talking about two losses here. Let's go back to the phone line, 617-779-7937. Let's go to Leo in Ipswich. What are your thoughts on what the Celtics are doing or not doing right now, Leo?
It kind of crystallized a lot of things this series because they've got all this talent, but the problem is their most talented players are not the heady players. They're not the ones that have the nuance of the game that Derek White does, Drew Holiday does, and maybe even Pritchett. But you get the other guys, they've been the best all their lives, and they don't have the head for anticipation and thinking about outside the box, you know, being in the right place heading under the basket to grab a quick rebound because this is the angle of the ball. Pass the ball in and then jump in and get self in position. They just don't do it. They almost got too much talent that they didn't get the nuance of the game.
All right, thanks for the call, Leo. I don't know, because I don't know what to think about when it comes to Jason Tatum, because all I hear from Doris Burke and national writers are how smart he is, how much he knows basketball. I even thought early in this game he was playing a different style. Now, I actually thought that was bad, Ted, and I don't know how you felt about this. I thought Jason Tatum heard the noise and played like he had heard the noise and was passing and was not shooting as much. I think he has rabbit ears, and I think he wants to be so good and so adored by the basketball world that he ebbs and flows. But I also think he's supposed to be a heady player. He's supposed to be a smart player, and that just isn't leading to the execution in these most important of games.
And that's exactly right. It's like, I think he's gotten a lot better at kind of breaking down double teams. I think he used to not be very good at that. So I think he's smartened up with that. But, their basketball, there's also situational basketball. And Andy, you and I have kind of harped on this going back way back when we thought was the turning point, where they stopped being just an average team back in early, I think, February, and they started turning around. It's because Jason Tatum didn't recognize the 2-for-1 opportunity he had in that game, and that's when Missoula got all over him before halftime, and then they came out and went gangbusters. Like, it's almost like situationally at the end of games, this isn't a smart team. It's not a smart coaching staff, and it's not the players don't. I mean, the players, Jason Tatum, it was like he didn't know what to do. At the end of the game, to not get a shot off with all the time. I think they got the rebound with 17 seconds left, and you're like, holy crap, they're not calling a timeout. Didn't we all have that feeling of felt this before? Okay, here we go. What happens? And Tatum doesn't get the shot off. So it's on both entities, both coaching and players. But situationally, our basketball IQ is not as high as it needs to be, Fitzy.
Here's the thing I don't understand. He's not a second-year player. He's 8 years into the league. He is now the world champion, and the what they're going to say now edict of last postseason is about to sour and be a really bad take that could potentially get thrown back in his face, Andy, if he doesn't turn it around. But I just don't understand why. No, I don't think anybody can, and we don't necessarily expect this to turn into a referendum on Jason Tatum, but if you're the man, you're the highest paid player in the league. If you're the leader, if you're the champ, and you want to be the face of the league, then you want to call down the thunder. Well, now you got it. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why there's no consistency to the game. Why is he asleep? You guys don't see all the things he does. Great, awesome rebounds. Oh, a couple cool assists. That's great. You have to be the best player in the court. There is no excuse. You have to facilitate other people being great, or you need to be the greatest one. And last night, he did neither, and the same was true two nights prior.
And this is absolutely a referendum on his legacy and who he is and the type of player he is, in part because he asks for that. If he was quiet, never said a word, never brought him his stature up or any of that, it might be different.
And you see him in every other commercial. I mean, every commercial now has got Tatum in it.
Right. He wants to be the man, except he isn't the man. He's not him. And this, he's falling flat on his face specifically in this series. So this is absolutely a referendum on him. And now I saw, it was actually, I think, on First Take this morning, is this a referendum, or maybe they used a different word, on Tatum and Brown? And you know I'm a bit of a defender. Do I think it's a little bit of a referendum on the pair? Yes. But Jaylen Brown has deferred. I think he's allowed Tatum to be the superstar here and been whatever he is considered after that. So the most respected or best player, yes, absolutely gets the criticism when your team sucks, when your team falls apart, when you look lost. And I feel bad for Tatum because I'm going to bitch about the final play, and it's him with the ball and it's him with the pass. That's on Missoula. So for Tatum to get it and be like, oh, so I just got to do this. We don't have like a game plan here. We don't have it's like razzle dazzle time in football where you expect the fastest kid on the field to just beat the other 11.
Can we just flesh that out a little bit? Like, do we know for sure? Like, I know that's what Mazzulla said, but like, it looked more like just backyard basketball. Did they look over and see Mazzulla signal in, okay, this is the play we're running? I didn't. And if they did, like, part of me just doesn't want to excuse Tatum in that situation. Part of me just wants to feel like if that's your version of you know, pick up basketball, you suck at it. But if it was if it truly was a set call, then I put more on Joe. But I don't know. How did you guys see that part?
I put it on Joe. I think you got to call a timeout there. I actually think, you know, we talk a lot about Bill Belichick's ego, right? And all these coaches have egos. I think most coaches want to call the timeout there to drop the play, to show their acumen, to show their basketball IQ, to free up their guy. I mean, Tibbs did it the other night when they had that run to the basket for Jalen Brunson. It was like the fake screen.
Beautifully drawn play.
Now, if it had gone in, it would have been even better. But, you know, like, as a coach, isn't that your opportunity to really put your stamp on the game, to show what you're made of? Like, that, I think Joe Mazzulla and his staff should have wanted to call a timeout there, if anything, to kind of show their own greatness, to inject themselves into the game.
That's how he operates. It's so infuriating. It's the whole, like, oh, he's the most, he wants to be, that's why I call him Montessori Mazzulla. He wants to be the hands-off coach that just lets them learn on their own. Great.
Okay,
well,
so go somewhere else then. I don't want that anymore.
I'm far from the biggest Joe Mazzulla fan in town. I've taken plenty of guff for it. I'll continue to do so. And if they storm back, win four, and make way to banner number 19, rub it in my face, I don't care. Last night I had some knucklehead on Twitter right back when I clapped out aloud about Mazzulla not taking the timeout and going home with one. Somebody was like, oh, yeah. What about Belichick not calling a timeout in Super Bowl 49? To which it's such a stupid comparison because they had all of the intel and advanced scouting that said based on the personnel the Seahawks were sending in, they thought they were going to run a pass play. Guess what? They were right. Mazzulla thought, oh, I can just run back the same play I just ran 20 seconds ago against one of the better defensive head coaches in the league. That was so green, just like it was, just like Hakimich came back to bite him in the ass because they brought in Ananobi, and then the Knicks are in the bonus, and now you've got really good shooters and not some, you know, clod on the court who can't make a free throw.
And I wonder, guys, if that's like, if that's Mazzulla saying that they just wanted to do the same play that they ran, just before that. It's his way of just kind of saying, it's because I don't know how to draw a good inbound play. I mean, seriously, like, and the thing is you needed 2 points to win the game, not three.
Yep,
so you didn't have to get a shot behind the 3-point. There's so many creative things you could come up with to get a guy open for a open 2-point shot. And it's almost as if they're like, nope, don't want to do it. Don't want to expose, you know, and not come up with a bad inbound play. I don't want people to like see my, you know, my coaching acumen. It just was mind boggling. Some would argue, well, you didn't call a timeout because you got the players you want on the court and the matchups you want. Really? Okay. You're giving them way too much credit if you think that that's what they were doing in that moment.
Points,
let's squeeze in another phone call here, 617-779-7937. Let's go to Bob in Londonderry. Bob, what were your reactions to that loss for the Celtics last night?
Well, I enjoy the show, and today it's been the big talk of everything. But, you know, from the beginning, I've been on the other side of the coin, meaning look at last night. I've never seen such a lackluster, soft effort. I'm the only one today, and I finally get the call. What was this through the beginning to the end of the game of the Celtics constantly laying on the floor and getting knocked over? And, you know, I hear the morning show and other people talk about the 86 Celtics. You realize if you hit Kevin McHale in the head with a hammer, he'd take it off you and he'd put it where you wouldn't want it. These guys, what a bunch of, they're laying down. What an embarrassing. And I'm not saying it's 100% over, but just remember, it's easy to say this, but I told you people 4+ years ago, after the Bruins debacle, I said, reality, you're not going to see the Patriots again do what you've seen. You're not going to see the Red Sox, the Bruins, or the Celtics.
All right, thanks for the call, Bob. I mean, they won the title last year, so not taking victory laps for something you said they were done 4 years ago when they literally won the title last year. But the toughness, the hit them in a hammer and they might fall over versus hit them in the hammer and they may take the hammer and beat you with your own hammer kind of mentality.
Yeah.
And the comparison is apt because stupid or not, dumb or not, fair or not, right or not, beginning in the year, we were talking about could this be one of the greatest Celtics teams ever? Could they set records? Could they? I mean, they obviously are trying to do something that hasn't been done since Bill Russell's Celtics, and that's defend a title for the Boston Celtics. So I think those comparisons to Larry Bird, Kevin McHale, these all-time great teams are fair right now, and they are really failing to measure up in that area. 617-779-7937. Taking you up to the top of the hour, it's going to be an entertaining Christian Arcan show tonight. I know that because if you think we have energy and reactions, just magnify that, and that's what Arcan does, even without the fruit that is these ugly losses for the Boston Celtics. So we'll finish out WEEI Afternoons with odds and ends, which just means lightning round. We'll get to as many of your calls and opinions as we can up next here on WEEI Afternoons. That was the voice of Colin Cowherd expressing some of the feelings we've talked about here on WEEI Afternoons. We're coming up near the end of the show. I know it feels like we just started, but unfortunately Red Sox baseball preempted us. So it is now time for Odds and Ends, which is brought to you by Cars for Kids, your trusted charity for car donations. Also accepts donations of boats, RVs, motorcycles, and real estate. Call today, 877-CARS-FOR-KIDS. That's Cars with a K. And I don't know if I often say this, but not much I could disagree with Colin Cowherd there. I think he hit it spot on. And, you know, you're going to start to get, guys, these big picture discussions, these Aaron Rodgers, oh, he's super talented, but how come he never wins? Or how come they win in the regular season and then they peter out in the postseason at home every year? Those are the things that are circling around Jason Tatum right now. Now, he can change that. This series isn't over. This postseason isn't over. And maybe he'll be all-world MVP, two-time champion when it's done. But those are the kind of whispers that are going to grow louder as this goes on. Also, we do need to acknowledge short show. Our show is already programmed for tomorrow. We'll continue to talk Celtics, and we'll be talking about Rafael Devers and his comments today to the media saying that Craig Breslow has asked him about playing first base, and he said no, and that he feels like they told him to put his glove away, that he's a DH, and now they are going back on their word. My response on Twitter, and I'll expand on this tomorrow, was this effing guy. This effing, like, he becomes less likable and a worse teammate every time I hear him speak.
There's two, you know, ways to look at it, though. There's going to be some people that are going to blame, you know, Breslow for not having, you know,
some
depth
have
at that.
Already, Ted. Yep.
Yeah, and some are going to feel like you, Andy. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. But yeah, this is a big kind of big news right in the middle of our show here as we wrap up. But we'll hit this tomorrow. And you just, you know what? There's some things that are coming out about how he handled just being told he was DH that I don't think I really realized until now that will factor into kind of what I think of this whole situation. So I look forward to doing that.
Yeah, I just wanted to get the lightning fast Ted Johnson, professional athlete / Super Bowl champion who played for, you know, the team everyone points to as the North Star of selflessness. You know, you guys come out of the Super Bowl as a team, no individuals. Here's Rafi Devers saying, nah, I really don't feel like doing that because you guys told me otherwise. How would something like that have gone over in a locker room like one full of leaders that you played in?
Like a lead balloon. You know, because of the expectations, Fitzy. You know, people, I mean, when's the last time? It's been prior to maybe 2018 that anybody was feeling the vibes, the good vibes about this team, like a lot of fans and people in the media were because of it was signing Alex Bregman to a roster that they thought was maybe the final piece. And so everybody was excited about this season. The players were excited. This is not going to play well in the locker room. I mean, they might not say it, and they're going to have his back publicly, but they're all thinking that this is a selfish, selfish act. I guarantee you, just talking to some former baseball players about this recently and just knowing the nature of the athlete, I don't think this is going to play well at all, guys. And so I worry about this maybe being something that holds this team back this year.
Brian Scalabrine might have been talking about the Red Sox when he said they are fractured, because this seems like the type of thing that could fracture a clubhouse.
No doubt.
Let's try to squeeze in a couple calls here, at least one. 617-779-7937. Aiden in Rhode Island, what are your thoughts on that ugly Celtics loss last night, Aiden?
Hey, yeah, two things for you guys. It feels like down the stretch, in stark contrast to last year's offense, it's a lot of one-on-one, just iso ball, where either Tatum or Brown are kind of expected to go right at their defender, and they're just missing shots. It feels like last year there was a lot more flow and rhythm with the offense, where guys like White and Horford were getting touches, swinging the ball. I want to know if you guys think that falls on Mazzulla. Are you seeing that as well? The last thing I wanted to touch on as well is the defense. Obviously, Brunson has the green light for the Knicks, and we're throwing Drew Holiday at him, who's our best defender. Is there anything else that we can...
Okay. Well, we're going to have to drop you anyway. Like, thanks for the call. Appreciate the passion. Yep, I've been there. I get passionate. Mad Dog gets there. Every once in a while, you get so passionate talking about sports that it slips out a little bit. Well, anyway, that's going to do it, boys. That was a fun, fast, passionate hour-plus post-Red Sox WEEI Afternoons. Celtics down 0-2 to the Knicks. They get back at it on Saturday. That means tomorrow we'll have time to continue to rip them, break down the loss, and look ahead to the matchup at Madison Square Garden to see if they can try to right this ship. And as we just noted, we'll be talking a lot about Rafi Devers, his comments that no, he doesn't want to play first base. In fact, he thinks the team is going back on its word. We're going to probably rip him. But Ted, as you said, there might be some people out there that defend him, feel like he's been done dirty here. So stick around here on WEEI right now for the Christian Arcan Show, 6 to 10 with the Red Sox playing today. I can guarantee you he's going to have a lot of passionate thoughts on Devers and the Celtics, so stick around for that. For Ted, for Fitzy, Andy Hart, we'll talk to you tomorrow, 2 to 6, WEEI Afternoons.
Let me make this prediction. I'll get it nice and clean for tomorrow's show. Okay. The Knicks lose by more than 16 points or win the game. So they either get smoked or they pull off the shot.
They get smoked.